the bomb's firing set. The greater the distance between them, Spray realized, the greater the risk that stray electricity could somehow enter an arming line, set off the detonators, and cause a nuclear explosion. By 1970, the Nuclear Safety Department had come up with an entirely new approach to preventing accidental nuclear detonations. Three basic safety principles had been derived from its research, and each would be assured by a different mechanism or component inside a weapon. The first principle was incompatibility. There had to be a unique arming signal that couldn't be sent by a short circuit or a stray wire. The second principle was isolation. The firing set and the detonators had to be protected behind a physical barrier that would exclude fire, electricity, and electromagnetic energy, that couldn't be easily breached, and that would allow only the unique arming signal to enter it. The third principle was inoperability. The firing set had to contain a part that would predictably and irreversibly fail in an abnormal environment. That part was called a weak link. The hardened barrier was called a strong link, and combined with a unique arming signal, they promised a level of nuclear weapons safety that would meet or exceed Walsky's 1-in-a-million standard. Another Sandia safety effort was being concluded at roughly the same time. Project Crescent had set out to design a super-safe bomb, one that wouldn't detonate under any conceivable set of accident conditions or spread plutonium, even after being mistakenly dropped from an altitude of 40,000 feet. At first, the Air Force was less than enthusiastic about requiring more safety in nuclear weapons, according to a classified memo on the project. But the Air Force eventually warmed to the idea. A super-safe bomb might permit the resumption of the Strategic Air Command's airborne alert. After more than 2 years of research, Project Crescent proposed a weapon design that, like a concept car at an automobile show, was innovative but impractical. To prevent the high explosives from detonating and scattering plutonium after a plane crash, the bomb would have a thick casing and a lot of interior padding. Those features would make it 3 to 4 times heavier than most hydrogen bombs. The additional weight would reduce the number of nuclear weapons that a B-52 could carry. And that's why the super-safe bomb was never built. Bob Purifoy became the director of weapon development at Sandia Albuquerque in September 1973. He'd closely followed the work of engineers in the safety department and shared many of their frustrations with the bureaucratic mindset at the lab. Nothing had been done about the problems that they'd discovered. Bill Stevens had traveled to Washington, D.C. 3 years earlier, briefed the Military Liaison Committee to the AEC on the dangers of abnormal environments, and described the weak-link, strong-link technology that could minimize them. The committee took no action. The Department of Defense was preoccupied with the war in Vietnam. A broken arrow hadn't occurred since Thule, and a familiar complacency once again settled upon the whole issue of nuclear weapon safety. After taking the new job, Purifoy made a point of reading the classified reports on every broken arrow and major weapon accident, a lengthy catalog of fires, crashes, and explosions, of near misses and disasters narrowly averted. The fact that an accidental detonation had not yet happened, that a major city had not yet been blanketed with plutonium, offered little comfort. The probabilities remained unknown. What were the odds of a screwdriver used to repair an alarm system launching the warhead off a missile? The odds of a rubber seat cushion bringing down a B-52? After reading through the accident reports, Purifoy reached his own conclusion about the safety of America's nuclear weapons. We are living on borrowed time. Purifoy had recently heard about an explosive called 135-triamino-246-trinitrobenzene, TATB. It had been invented in 1888, but had been rarely used since then, because TATB was so hard to detonate. Under federal law, it wasn't even classified as an explosive. It was considered a flammable solid. With the right detonators, however, it could produce a shockwave almost as strong as the high explosives that surrounded the core of a nuclear weapon. TATB soon became known as an insensitive high explosive. You could drop it, hammer it, set it on fire, smash it into the ground at a speed of 1,500 feet per second, and it still wouldn't detonate. The explosives being used in America's nuclear weapons would go off from an impact one-tenth as strong. Harold Agnew was now the director of Los Alamos, and he thought using TATB and hydrogen bombs made a lot more sense as a means of preventing plutonium dispersal during an accident than adding 2,000 or 3,000 extra pounds of steel and padding. All the necessary elements for nuclear weapons safety were now available. A unique signal, weak link, strong link technology, insensitive high explosives. The only thing missing was the willingness to fight a bureaucratic war on their behalf. And Bob Purifoy had that quality in abundance. He was no longer a low-level employee toiling away on the electrical system of a bomb without a sense of the bigger picture. As the head of weapon development, he now had some authority to make policy at Sandia, and he planned to take advantage of it. 3 months into the new job, Purifoy told his superior, Glenn Fowler, a vice president at the lab, that all the nuclear weapons carried by aircraft had to be retrofitted with new safety devices. Purifoy didn't claim that the weapons were unsafe. He said their safety could no longer be presumed. Fowler listened carefully to his arguments and agreed. A briefing for Sandia's upper management was scheduled for February 1974. The briefing did not go well. The other vice presidents at Sandia were indifferent, unconvinced, or actively hostile to Purifoy's recommendations. The strongest opponents of a retrofit argued that it would harm the lab's reputation. It would imply that Sandia had been wrong about nuclear weapons safety for years. They said new weapons with improved safety features could eventually replace the old ones, and they made clear that the lab's research and development